Hi there, thanks for taking up with us here on this Tuesday, February 12th edition of Golf Today. It's actually the 13th. See, I'm about to make a mistake on Valentine's Day. I'm Todd Lewis with Rex Hoggard. Over the next 2 hours, we will take you live to Riviera to hear from our reporters on the ground. And everyone's talking about Tiger Woods, who is also on the ground, as you saw in our video, walking around with a new look. We'll see if he's got a better game than we've seen over the last year or so.
This feels a little surreal because usually you and I are out doing that walking. We're walking through the rough. We're in the wet grass. We woke up early. We went out to get a glimpse of Tiger Woods. And there's always an expectation. We kind of covered this yesterday. But even at this stage in his career, 48 years old, everything that he's gone through physically, all of the challenges that he's had to deal with, there are still so many expectations every time he shows up at the golf course.
Yeah, there's a buzz. There's an energy, no doubt about it. When Tiger Woods shows up at a tournament, it doesn't matter if he hasn't won in a couple of years, which is obviously the case now, or if he is just winning six or seven times a year, which we have seen many times in his career. So we will be interested to see where Tiger Woods is in regards to his game. He's always compelling, no matter where he is in his career.
Well, and along with Tiger Woods, and I think that's the beauty of what they've done with this event, they've made it a signature event. There is also a stacked field that's showing up this year at Riviera. You pointed out 70 players with a cut, but they'll all be vying for that title and that $4 million winner purse, including world number one Scottie Scheffler coming off of another solid week last weekend. Scottsdale and Patrick Cantlay. He finished third here last year. This would mean the world to him if he was able to do this in Los Angeles.
Yeah, tough competition for Tiger Woods, and turning our focus back to him. Last night in L.A., the 15-time major champion announced his new apparel brand. It is called Sunday Red. The brand, which was created in partnership with TaylorMade, launches on May the 1st. The logo is a 15-striped tiger representing Woods' 15 major victories. Now, the name intentionally turns Sunday into two words because, quote, there's a special power in threes. Now, Tiger put this out on social media last night saying, quote, it started with a passion, the passion of competing against ourselves, the field, the course, life. Out of that passion, Sunday Red rises. And Tiger further explained the idea of his new brand last night in SoCal.
Well, Sunday Red, well, it kind of says it, you know, it's me, right? I've worn red on Sundays, and it started with mom. Mom thought, being a Capricorn, that my power color was red, and so I wore red as a junior golfer, and I won some tournaments, and lo and behold, it's weird. I go to a university that is red, Stanford's red. We always wore red on the final day that we played every single tournament, and then every single tournament I've played as a professional, I've worn red. It's just become synonymous with me, and that's who I am, Sunday Red. This logo, this tiger, it means something. Each stripe means something, and it means all the majors that I've won, all 15 of them. So
that's awesome.
So tiger. Who's the one who broke the trademark earlier?
Jordan. Show yourself.
There you go. Okay. So if I happen to win another major championship, you'll be the first one to know that we're gonna have to redo the trademark and add a 16th stripe to it.
It's so good.
Okay. All right, thank you.
All right, here's a close look at the new logo, Sunday Red, and you can count up the 15 stripes there. That's just put out by the PGA Tour. So it's a cool little logo. I still don't understand why Sunday is two words, but okay. But it's interesting, you know, I kind of put this in the realm of, like, when you get new gear, and I'm not talking about apparel, I'm talking about golf gear, new clubs. You're excited, you got a new energy about yourself when you go out to the golf course. Now, Tiger, who's been with Nike for, you know, long, long time, career, since he started back in 1996, now he's got a new apparel line, something that he's proud of, something that he helped develop. Now, I'm curious if, although it's, you know, not the most, the biggest factor in his performance this week, if that gives him some energy.
I think this goes to what he has kind of talked about recently. And we knew he had been busy off the golf course. Certainly, we've talked about him being on the policy board and just the idea of it's consuming a lot of his time. But now you see this. Now you know that he spent a lot of time looking into this. Clearly, this is something that he spent a lot of energy on as well. It's still jarring. Because if you mentioned it, go back to 96 and Hello World at the Greater Milwaukee Open. He showed up with the Nike swoosh on, and every step of the way, all 15 majors, all 82 PGA Tour events, it has been the Nike swoosh. I think there will be a bit of an adjustment, but after the first couple of majors, after the first couple of times we see him on a Sunday wearing that red, I think it'll sort of sink in, but it is jarring when you look at it right now. We were just walking and watching him walk down the 10th fairway at Riviera. Didn't look right to me.
Didn't look right to you?
It did not. I'm sorry. I'm going to call it right now. I like the logo. I'm not the one that's going to be making fashion statements or fashion critiques at all. Trust me, because my wife will tell you I have no business doing that. I actually love the hoodies, but still, watching him walk down a fairway without the swoosh on is tough.
Wow. Is there any chance it could grow on you? I mean, we're just one day in.
Sure.
Okay.
And I love the fact he left the caveat out there for a 16th major. And all right, if I get to 16, I will adjust the logo.
And by the way, if he wins, let's say he wins a major championship, that night in the press conference, he should just take out a Sharpie and just draw a line. Don't you think? That'd be fantastic as well. So Tiger Woods on the golf course right now at Riviera playing a practice round. He's playing the second nine, started on the 10th hole, the famous 10th hole. You know what's interesting? Tiger Woods has played at Riviera a number of times, 14 to be specific, and has yet to win. This is remarkable to me. He and Jack Nicklaus, considered the two greatest players of all time, have yet to win at Riviera. He did have a runner-up finish back in 1999 to Ernie Els. Now, this is what Tiger had to say, or we had to say, rather, about Tiger, and we want to get you involved as well. Tiger makes his season debut this week. What are your expectations for the 15-time major champion? Your response could be featured right here on our show, so send it to us. We would love to hear from you. We talked about expectations. Yes, it would be great if Tiger Woods could put himself in the mix. It would be remarkable, given the fact that he grew up about an hour away from Riviera, never won there, as we've talked about. But you mentioned some things that have kept him very busy. Obviously, his rehab, which is constant with him, not only his leg, but his back as well. Secondly, he's been a member of the PGA Tour Policy Board that he is very invested in. He is trying to save, in his mind, his legacy and the PGA Tour's legacy. And now he's obviously been in talks or working with TaylorMade and producing the Sunday Red Line. So he has been very busy off the golf course. Has that given him enough time to work on his game to get ready for this event?
I'm pretty sure he's become adept over the years at compartmentalizing things, focusing when he needs to focus. I think the bigger question coming into this week is, you just looked at it on that graphic right there, only a handful of top tens. Obviously, he's never won here. That is almost, in my mind, a statistical anomaly, simply because I did not ever feel like there was a golf course he could not play well. If you look at where he has won pretty much anywhere on the PGA Tour, it was always the hardest golf course. It was the longest golf courses. It was the ones with the deepest rough. There's nothing about Riviera that immediately comes to mind that, oh, he can't do it there for whatever reason. And so to have that many starts on this golf course is shocking to me. I did come to the conclusion, though, this morning, if ever there was a year when I would have some level of expectations for Tiger Woods, and again, he has not played in a tournament, an official PGA Tour event, since the Masters last year when he withdrew in the middle of the third round. So we don't even know exactly what to expect. But if there's any reason to have expectations, it's because there's only 70 players. And if you look at the history of his career, right, he's always done really, really well against limited fields for obvious reasons. You have fewer people to beat. That's why he always wanted to play in the limited field events.
Yeah, the WGCs, he owned the WGCs. You know, I'm really surprised he hasn't played well here. And I say that because if you look at where he's had success, Torrey Pines, the Memorial, Muirfield Village, obviously Bay Hill. Those are big, brawny golf courses. This golf course, length is not that huge a factor. It's more about precision and management. And he hasn't won. I'm really surprised that he has not won in 14 starts there.
Shocked, maybe. I'd go so far as to say, simply because of all the things you pointed out. I think earlier in his career, there was a stage in his career. Let's look at the Hank Haney years, just to label him and look at him. Like, we clearly had some issues with the driver. It was clearly, if you put him on a type of golf course, you were going to question his ability to be, quote unquote, Tiger Woods at that time. Where he had success, all those big, brawny golf courses where he could take out the driver, it could be aggressive. LA's really not that.
Right.
However, I think later in his career, and let's take the last decade as, quote unquote, later in his career, look at his strength. It's his iron play, especially his long iron play, which you think that would be a key at Riviera. And also, he's smarter than everyone else. He's done it.
Right.
That institutional knowledge should be the key for him getting around Riviera.
Yeah, that's why he won the 2019 Masters. I mean, he outmanaged those who were trying to beat him in that final round. So I am surprised he hasn't won. So what's a good week for him?
You know what? And I'm going to go out on a limb here just because we got some pushback last night from some folks who watched yesterday's show. I'm not going to say that he's going to win simply because there's nothing in the body of work that suggests he's ready for that right now. And I touched on this yesterday. We're going to continue to touch on it. He doesn't know what he's going to get when he wakes up Thursday morning. That's just the reality of being Tiger Woods right now. He may wake up and the body and the leg and the ankle and everything feels perfect, and he goes out and has one of those magical days. Or it could be the other way. Now, I think he makes the cut, because as we pointed out, 70 players, only 20 of them in theory are going to miss the cut. So I'm pretty sure I can safely say that. I think a top 10 finish would be very, very good.
Wow. Top 10 would be great, actually.
Yes.
So you are not expecting him to win. Would you be surprised if he does?
I would be surprised if he does. Again, this is all about body of work, and I think I've used this line too many times. It's become cliched by now. I've gotten out of the Tiger Woods doubting business because I've gotten proven wrong.
Then you're going against yourself.
Time again. But again, I'm the scientist in the group. Show me what you've done lately. Like, show me something in your body of work the last, you pick how many years we need to go back, that suggests he's ready to win. Not just on any golf course, on this golf course. We just had a 5-minute conversation about how he's not got it done at Riviera. So why do you think that this is going to be the year?
Well, because you said just a couple of sentences, you never doubt Tiger Woods. So I'm not expecting him to win, but I would not be surprised if he does, because he has proved us wrong, us so-called experts, many, many times. Throughout our careers, especially. Here's how you can watch coverage of the Genesis Invitational, by the way, Thursday, 4 p.m., Friday, 4 p.m., and then Saturday and Sunday, we're right here as well at 1 p.m. all Eastern time.
Still to come on Golf Today, shooting 59 in a professional golf tournament is an impressive feat, but what about 57? Todd, you ever shot 57?
No.
Cristobal Del Solar did just that on the Korn Ferry Tour last week and joins us next to explain how the number was possible. Stay tuned.
Welcome back to Golf Today. What a week it was on the Korn Ferry Tour. The Asteroid Golf Championship in Bogota, Colombia. Cristobal Del Solar put together a clinic on Thursday, shooting a 13 under 57. The round, which was recorded with preferred lies in effect on a soggy country club de Bogota, marked the lowest round at a PGA Tour sanctioned event, and he tied the lowest professional tournament round ever. There was a 57 recorded on the Alps Tour in Europe 5 years ago. Look at that scorecard. 9 birdies, 2 eagles, goes out in 27 and shoots a 57.
That is the best flex in the world. How did you shoot 57? I two-putted the last ball. He get a look at sub-60 single-round scores on the Korn Ferry Tour in the PGA Tour. There you see Cristobal 57. That was an opening round last week in Bogota. Steven Yeager shot his 58 on the Korn Ferry Tour back in 2016. And, of course, the PGA Tour's Mr. 58, Jim Furyk, in 2016 at the Travelers Championship. Here's Cristobal's career bio. Second year on the Korn Ferry Tour. Best finish so far is fourth place finish at the 2024 Bahamas Greater Zuma Classic. Previously competed on the PGA Tour Latin America, where he has 4 wins, and his current world golf ranking 230th in the world. And it is my pleasure to welcome in Mr. 57 himself. Cristobal, thank you so much for joining us. I've asked this question numerous times in my career. When did it dawn on you that you could shoot a 59? Because that's normally the conversation we're having. And when did it dawn on you you could shoot a 57?
Well, honestly, I still cannot believe it. I don't know. I just, you know, it was just another week for me. Obviously, you know, the routine that I do every week is just, you know, so routinary. And then when I got to the tournament, you just don't wake up and think you're going to shoot 57. I just try to, you know, told myself, you know, let's have a good round. Let's, you know. I played, the tournament was in 2 different courses, and we played, my first round obviously was in Pacos, which was the shorter one. So, I kind of told myself, let's try to take advantage of today, especially the conditions were a bit wet. So I just, you know, told myself, let's try to, maybe take a little bit more risk, hit drivers in probably holes that you shouldn't. And, I don't know. It just turned out to be amazing.
Yeah. 2 eagles, as we mentioned, 9 birdies. Heck, we'll be happy with 9 pars in our round. Most of America would as well. But when you were playing that well, when you're in, quote, in the zone, as it seemed like you were, how would you describe that feeling, those emotions?
It almost feels like you're like in almost like cruise control. Actually, we talk about that a lot with my mental coach, Eugenio Lizama. He's from Chile as well, and we try to get in that zone as much as we can. And obviously, I'm still trying to learn myself, and you know, the way that we do things. And I feel like it's an ongoing thing. But yeah, it just almost feels like you're not really making any errors. And just like I said, it's just like in some sort of like cruise control. You're not really, it's just like not me playing, it's somebody else. But yeah, it's unbelievable.
Now, I'm sorry to put you on the spot like this, but you shoot a 57. Give me your top two or three shots from that round. And was there ever a time when you started feeling the nerves, when you thought, okay, this is special, it's going to happen?
So probably the best shot of the day was, there was a reachable, well, there's a few reachable par fours, but number nine was a reachable par four, and it was about maybe 330 to the pin on sea level. And I just hit driver there. I mean, when I played the practice round, we were kind of talking with my caddy, and you know, depending on where they put the pin, I was thinking of hitting 3 wood short of the green. But then when I saw where the pin location was, I just kind of was like, you know what? We are, I think it was 6 or 7 under at that point. And I mean, grabbed driver, and I was like, you know, let's try to take advantage of this, you know, this situation. And I hit it, and I hit it about, I think it was 10 feet away, and I just made it. It was just, cherry on top.
You know, Cristobal, it's interesting. You look at what you did that week. You shoot that 57. We always hear this. It's hard to follow up a low round with another low round. A ho-hum 69 was his next round. I would like to get your attitude that you had in that second round, or that feeling and the emotions you had after shooting the 57 the previous day.
I know, actually. So I was speaking with my coach, Eduardo Miquel, and we were kind of, you know, discussing right after I finished the first round. And he was, you know what, he was telling me, you know what, kind of, you know, just relax. Obviously, I was playing on a different course the next 3 days. So it was just more of like, you know, a new environment. It was like, I wasn't playing the same course. So it was just like, try to, you know, embrace the moment, just focus on your routine and just kind of go with the flow. And it turned out to be that, you know, like that, I shot 2 under, I think it was 2 under the second round. And I felt very comfortable, which I don't know, maybe I thought I wouldn't really feel that comfortable after shooting 57, but I was very comfortable, you know, stroked the ball very well, putted it very good. And, you know, the conditions that afternoon, it wasn't really afternoon. I think I teed off at like around 10 in the morning. The conditions were, you know, not as easy as I would have expected. So, you know, I was pretty, you know, pretty happy with shooting 2 under that second round.
What was the reaction from your fellow competitors? We talk a lot about these rounds, and we're getting more and more rounds in the 50s, it seems like, every single year. But from a competitor standpoint, what did your fellow players tell you?
No, they were amazing. As soon as I finished, I got millions of texts. And they were all congratulating me. And, you know, they were all very happy. I don't know. I kind of felt a lot of, like, how do you say it, camaraderie. And you know, it's just nice, you know, people that you didn't really like talk before, now they're like, you know, you're talking and you kind of, you know, bonding all together. So it kind of felt, you know, it felt good. It felt really good.
All right. And you finish, you finish fifth, solo fifth. Do you walk away from that week saying, man, I shot 57. That's an elite high, but gosh, I should have won. Is there a disappointment that you didn't cross the line as a victor?
Yeah, I mean, of course. I mean, I'm very happy that, you know, I shot 57, and honestly still cannot believe it, but you know, like in any tournament, I want to win, you know? And if you don't really, you know, come out like that, it's some sort of, some sort of disappointment. You know, that's just golf. I just try to take it as that. You know, some days I shoot 57 and some other days I don't play as well. So it's just how it is. Unfortunately, I wish I could shoot 57 every day.
Now, I read that you considered a career in tennis before you decided to focus in on golf. What would be the equivalent in tennis to shooting a 57 in golf?
Oh, my God, I don't know. I follow tennis quite a bit, but I don't really know. Maybe, I don't know. I can't really relate to that, honestly. Maybe winning 6-0, 6-0 to, you know, the best player in the world. I'm assuming. I don't really know. But I wanted to, you know, I wanted to be a pro tennis player when I was very young. I don't know. It was just a dream when I was little, maybe 8 to 12 years old. I just pursued tennis, you know, pretty strongly. But then, you know, after that, I, you know, wanted to play golf and just, I fell in love with it. I grew up playing golf with my family back home, with my brothers, and just, you know, around 12, 13, I started having more success with it and just, you know, fell in love with the game and kind of pursued from that point on.
You made the right choice, Cristobal. Anybody that can go out and shoot 57 at a PGA Tour sanctioned event deserves to have this as your profession. Congratulations on this historic feat. Wish you all the best on the Korn Ferry Tour and hope to see you on the PGA Tour the upcoming seasons. Thanks so much.
Yeah, thank you very much. I hope so too.
All right. And that is Cristobal Del Solar, who shoots a 57 on the Korn Ferry Tour in Bogota. I mean, I just cannot imagine what that feeling is like as you're putting for 56.
Again, two putts for 57. That's a pretty good flex. I don't know if you can do anything better than that. We're going to have this conversation later in the show, but I wanted to hear what his fellow competitors said about this round. Because from the outside, you're going to look at the length of the golf course. You're going to look at the fact that there was a yellow sticker on the card, which is preferred lies, lift clean in place, all of these things, and we're going to talk a little bit more about it. But I think the reaction from the players speaks volumes, because they understand that even though it's not the hardest golf course in the world, it's not the longest golf course in the world, you still have to move it around to shoot a 57. It doesn't matter what course you're playing.
Yeah, greatest sub 60 on the PGA Tour is what?
Sub 60 on the PGA Tour?
Yeah, you got one?
I mean, I would have to go with Al Geiberger because he did it first.
First one to do it. Yeah. Hey, that's a great point. I like that as well. David Duval, 25 years ago in the desert in Palm Springs.
To win. That's a good
win. In the final round.
Sure.
And if you look at the stats, I want to challenge you out there. If you go back and look at the stats of that round.
Numbers.
Final round,
this would be good.
Man, I mean, he had 9 approaches within 5 feet. And I think all but one were within 20 feet. And he had a few putts for a guy who shoots 59. But that is the record right there on a PGA Tour sanctioned event. And Cristobal Del Solar shooting a 57, the first ever to shoot 57. Tiger Woods has never gone sub 60 on the PGA Tour, which may be another surprise. But he's out there trying to get ready for his tournament. That is the Genesis Invitational. We will continue to follow him as he plays the back nine practice round here on Golf Today. Time now for our round table, and we go to Southern California, where we say hello to two guys who are on the grounds. Yes, Ryan Lavner, he is at Riviera Country Club. We assume Eamon Lynch will make his way there at some point today, but he is in SoCal. Guys, good morning to you. Let's talk a little bit about Tiger Woods, who again is on the property there at Riviera Country Club playing a practice round. There's always excitement and anticipation when Tiger comes out on the PGA Tour after a layoff. What do you make of Tiger's presence there at Riviera? And Eamon, we'll start with you, and his new look.
Well, the new look, I'm not sold on the logo. It kind of looks like an elevated Bonefish Grill logo to me, but it does speak to the kind of brand equity that Tiger Woods has out there. And it's going to be an interesting experiment. You know, he is clearly in a transition period of his career where the salesmanship no longer depends upon performance inside the ropes. And it's really, to me, the interesting part of this is almost the business angle, because he spent such a long time with Nike, but for the last 4 or 5 years, Nike really hasn't been invested in the golf space, nominally in the apparel space, not at all in the equipment space. And now he's partnered with TaylorMade, who are obviously very much invested in nothing else but the golf space. So it'll be interesting to see if that actually gets some traction with Tiger at all. In terms of his performance inside the ropes this week, I'm not as optimistic as Rex in terms of the expectations this week. It's easy to say that the expectations ought to be low because he hasn't finished a PGA Tour event in a year. But at a certain point, the more he plays, the more we are going to have expectations, either good or bad. And to me, a good week for Tiger is really showing an improvement on what we saw at the Hero. He finished 18th out of 20 players there. He was dead last in strokes gained approach and finished 18th in putting. So anything that shows sharpness and an improvement on that, to me, constitutes a good week against a field of this caliber.
Eamon, you said bonefish grill. I was actually thinking as a barbecuer, like bacon strips that were on a griddle. That's just kind of where my head went immediately. But as someone who is colorblind and who has Golf Channel NBC Sports semi-apparel, I'm really not qualified to talk about that. As it relates to Tiger Woods' performance, I think I err more on the side of Rex than you, Eamon, on this. Because for so long, at least over the past couple of years, we have talked steadfastly about how much Tiger Woods' performance is going to be dictated by his health and whether he can actually go through the fundamental aspect of walking 72 holes in competition. Based on what we saw at the Hero, based on what we saw at the PNC Championship, at least the early returns here at Riviera, that is not actually going to be the issue. Now we can actually focus on Tiger Woods' game, the quality of his strikes. We know he's still plenty long. I think the most interesting aspect to me to watch this week is Tiger's iron play. In his heyday, obviously, he was a preeminent iron player on the PGA Tour, at least in the small sample size we have since his return from the car crash. It has just not been quite as sharp. And we look at the best players in the world, they are the best iron players. If Tiger Woods wants to compete against the best players in the world at this signature event, his iron play needs to be typically sharp.
Eamon, I want to direct this one back to you, and I do appreciate you at least waking up and getting out of bed to join us this morning. We talked about this all day yesterday, the idea that things got out of control last week at TPC Scottsdale. Give us your thoughts.
I thought heading into the week, it was nice to actually be focused on a tournament where the fans were the story, as opposed to focusing on the players and how much more they feel as though they're entitled to play for every week. There's always been an element of boorish behavior at TPC Scottsdale. The question is there more of it, or are we seeing more of it because of the prevalence of social media videos? And it may actually be a little bit of both. To me, the problem is the clowns are no longer outside the ropes, guys. And tour players can tune out a lot of white noise going on outside the ropes. But if you've got a clown running onto the field of play to do snow angels in a bunker, then ultimately that's a problem. And a lot of players clearly got into the faces of fans last week. We saw Billy Horschel do it. We saw even Zach Johnson do it. And you're going to see a point if change doesn't happen. And I know the tournament has said change will happen. But if it doesn't, you're going to see even more players vote with their feet and stay home, because the players will tune out a lot of behavior that they're accustomed to. They know what they're signing up for to an extent. And if you don't like it, fair enough, don't go. But that's not a luxury that every player has. A lot of them do have to go. And frankly, nobody likes someone who's kind of loud and belligerent in their workplace. It's kind of like us with Bramble.
I don't think it crossed the line last week, to be honest with you. And to be fair, they weren't braiding me inside the ropes, and I wasn't there to see some of the fan fighting in person. But you also have to keep in mind kind of the confluence of events. It was a pretty rare Phoenix Open in the sense that you had the weather delays, you had some of the choke points on the golf course that made some areas inaccessible. Of course, when you're pumping 200,000 people onto the same property with limited access, there are inevitably going to be problems. And I heard Chance Cosby yesterday on the show, and I'm sure there will be some changes made. They can either limit the alcohol sales, they can, you know, dial back the attendance numbers, whatever the case may be. You could beef up security inside the ropes. But I actually don't think that it rose to the level that it was affecting the competition. You didn't see an unruly fan, you know, duck underneath the ropes and take Nick Taylor's iron and twirl it like a baton twirler. You didn't have any of the final groups affected by any of the calls over the past couple holes. I don't think it actually affected the competition. It affected those who perhaps weren't in the hunt and, you know, had a little bit more rabbit ears. Again, I think it's probably going to be a moot point because Chance Cosby is going to want to attract the best field he possibly can. But I don't think this was anything different than we've seen over the past 25 years at this tournament. I think there were just some unforeseen circumstances.
Well, let me ask you this, and Eamon, I guess we'll start with you. I mean, you heard Chance Cosby said things have got to change. How do you balance changing the atmosphere so you don't have as much boorish behavior, but at the same time, keep the greatest show on grass attitude, party atmosphere that you have, which gets close to 500,000 people there, raises a lot of money for charity, and continues, you know, the strengths of that tournament? Eamon, go ahead, no comment. Lav, we'll get back to Eamon in a minute. Lav, did you hear my question? Let's get you got an answer to that?
Yeah, look, I think there's certainly some changes that can be made, but we're entering a new era, Todd, with the PGA Tour, especially now with the investors, with the Strategic Sports Group. They're going to want to maximize profitability when it comes to the PGA Tour. And so how do you do that? There's certain changes that you can make. You can certainly cut costs. You can cut staff, whatever the case may be. You can lean into the team aspect. You can do the TGL League and the Simulator Golf League. But a lot of tournaments are probably going to want to lean into the fun and to attract not just the hardcore golf fan like you and me, but the casual sports fan that you see in Phoenix. And so I think there's a very fine line that the PGA Tour is going to have to walk here, where you're trying to appease both parties without necessarily alienating one or the other. I personally think the PGA Tour should lean more into the Phoenix direction. You know, these are regular season tournaments that are designed to boost interest and awareness in the tournament, so long as it does not, again, affect the competition. I think if these players want to be paid like regular sports figures in the NBA or the NFL, I think there's going to be some adjustments that are made to kind of evolve the PGA Tour to that level of competition as well, and kind of the fan behavior.
There is something strangely soothing about the idea of Eamon not having something to say about something. Gentlemen, stick around. We got plenty more to talk about. We'll head back out to the Dream Factory and our dream team right after this break. Welcome back. Our Golf Today Roundtable. Eamon, I'm going to take it back out to you. There's been some talk, including from our very own Paul McGinley at Pebble Beach before we got rained out for that final round. The idea being that some of these record scores that we've seen, and Paul was specifically talking about Wyndham Clark's 60 at Pebble Beach because it had the red sticker, because they were playing Preferred Lies, that those records should come with some sort of asterisk. What are your thoughts?
I tend to agree to an extent. I mean, Live Clean in Place was in place when Al Geiberger shot the first ever 59 under. Al Geiberger doesn't actually recall using Live Clean in Place at any point during the round, but technically it was part of the books. And so I do think there's an asterisk on that 60 at Pebble, and on Cristobal's 57 that we saw in Colombia as well. I mean, I saw the PGA Tour's website charitably describe the course as gettable, which I do think is kind of an issue here. Context matters in historical rounds, and there were no asterisks around the likes of David Duval's round or Jim Furyk shooting 59-58 up at Hartford in years gone by as well. You know, there has to be a context for these things. It's a fine round of golf, and all credit to the guy who shot it, but I do think it matters, the conditions and the context in which that round was shot.
I don't know, Eamon. I think if you're looking for context, you have to look at his round, at least compared to his peers. It was still four or five shots better than the next best score. If you're looking at anything, it wouldn't necessarily be Live Clean in Place that deserves the asterisk, but actually the course that was used in this competition, one of the two. It was 6,200 yards and played at elevation, so he was basically hitting wedge shots into most of the par fours. I think it speaks to a broader picture of venue selection when it comes to the Korn Ferry Tour. Each and every week, these guys are being asked to shoot 20, 25, 30 under par to win. That's not necessarily the best indicator of who's playing the best this week, but rather who's getting really hot and filling it up. And so I'd love to see just stiffer tests across the Korn Ferry Tour. That's been talked about on the PGA Tour, especially in the summer when you get some of these softer conditions. So I think it's a bigger question to be asked is that, rather than kind of Live Clean in Place conditions.
All right, let's talk about the world's number one player, Eamon, and Scottie Scheffler. Last year, remarkably, he won the PGA Tour Player of the Year award, finishing 162nd on tour in strokes gained putting. Now, he's been working with Phil Kenyon since last fall as a technical putting coach. He has had some slight improvement. He's currently 107th on the tour in strokes gained putting, but he missed some critical putts down the stretch last week in Phoenix, which gave him an opportunity to win, and his ball striking was spot on, as it usually is. Are we seeing a positive turn in Scottie's putting, or should we still be concerned?
There is still cause for concern, particularly on some of the shorter misses we saw at the weekend. I mean, he ranked 44th in the field in putting in Phoenix, but he was 63rd out of 73 guys who made the cut on Sunday when it really mattered. And this is the guy who led the field in strokes gained approach. And you do have to worry at a certain point if that becomes corrosive. When you hit the ball as close to the hole as Scottie Scheffler does, as often as Scottie Scheffler does, and you don't seem to get the payoff on it at the end. And this is a guy who looks as though he's in a perfect place in terms of being world number one, perfect place in terms of his ball striking. His life seems very normal, stable, and happy, except when he gets a putter in his hand. And he doesn't communicate, or his body language does not suggest a man who has an awful lot of belief. He seems, in a way, like Sergio Garcia 20 years ago, where the body language suggested he doesn't really believe the putts are going to go in. And I think he's showing some progress with Phil Kenyon. Is it enough? Who knows? I mean, the fact is we see Scottie Scheffler miss more putts because Scottie Scheffler is on TV all day, every weekend afternoon, because Scottie Scheffler puts himself in the position to be in contention and make or miss those putts every weekend that others don't. But I do think it's a source of concern for a guy who is excelling in every single aspect of the game except that one.
I definitely think there's progress, Amy. I think that's indisputable. He's gained, I think, 50 positions in strokes gained putting, and there's always been the talk, at least over the past year and a half, that, you know, if Scottie Scheffler can just putt average, he's going to win 6-7 times a year. That's, I think, proving to be false. He hasn't won on the PGA Tour since the Players' Championship last March, despite now kind of being middle of the pack, at least when it comes to his putting. I think it's more to the kind of the caliber of the tournament. If it gets into a shootout, if it gets into a track meet, average putting for Scottie Scheffler is not going to cut it, despite kind of leading the pack, obviously, in his ball striking. If he can now just be a tick above average in those sorts of track meets, but when you get to a tournament here like the Genesis, you get to the Players' Championship, obviously you get to the major championships, merely being satisfactory or mediocre on the greens should be enough. I think the bigger question that we've seen since his work with Phil Kenyon is kind of a reverting to the mean over the weekend. It's the same thing you see with players going through a swing change. Do they necessarily trust it when the pressure is at its highest on the weekend and every shot matters? We haven't quite seen that bear out with Scottie Scheffler on the weekend so far, assuming he puts himself back into position here again at Riviera, because he typically because he almost always does. That's what I'm gonna be looking for. Will his putting stand up on the weekend?
Lav and Eamon, making people smarter. Thanks, gents. Welcome back to Golf Today on a busy Wednesday, with Tiger Woods poised to make his first start of 2024 in a world-class field assembled in Los Angeles for the season's third signature event. Coming up, we take you back out to Riviera for a live report from our own Kira K. Dixon.
Golf Today.
The PGA Tour is in Tinseltown this week for the Genesis Invitational as the West Coast Swing begins to wrap up. You can catch live first round coverage Thursday, 4 p.m. Eastern Time, as Tiger Woods returns to the PGA Tour. Hello, buddy. Welcome back to Golf Today. I'm Rex Hocker, joined by my colleague, my friend, Todd Lewis.
Hey there, my man. We're two Florida guys up here in Stamford, Connecticut, and it is a major nor'easter that is hitting this area. There's snow everywhere. And a funny story, Rex has a rental car, and I was going to ride with him to our studio here, and you opted to not drive. And why is that?
This story goes back to, in a previous life, I was in the Marines. I was a military police officer. And having grown up in Florida, I never drove in ice or snow. And then one night in South Carolina, when I was stationed at Buford Air Station, there was an ice storm. And I told my commanding officer that I probably shouldn't be driving. I put me on a post. He had full faith in me. I wrecked a car 5 minutes into my shift, a patrol car, real patrol car. And by the time I got done with the paperwork, I went back out on patrol and wrecked a second car. Ran that one into someone's house, unfortunately. So I think I have the record of, and the Marine Corps MP wrecked two cars in less than 2 hours.
Now, as an MP, do you call that in? Do you say, I've got a 1020 car that runs into a house?
Well, 1020 is a location. You're going to mess it up. But yes, it was very embarrassing. And they finally put me on a post. They weren't going to let me crash three cars.
Well, then, it sounds like we made a wise decision taking an Uber here to our studio today. We're going to turn our focus back to Tiger Woods. Last night in Los Angeles, the 15-time major champion announced his new apparel brand, that being Sunday Red. The brand, which was created in partnership with TaylorMade, launches May the 1st. Logo is 15, a 15-striped tiger representing Woods' major victories. The name intentionally turned Sunday into two words because there is a special power in threes. Now, Tiger put this out on social media last night saying, quote, it started with a passion, the passion of competing against ourselves, the field, the course, life. Out of that passion, Sunday Red rises.
Well, Sunday Red, well, it kind of says it, you know, it's me, right? I've worn red on Sundays, and it started with mom. Mom thought, being a Capricorn, that my power color was red, and so I wore red as a junior golfer, and I won some tournaments. And lo and behold, it's weird. I go to a university that is red. Stanford's red. We always wore red on the final day that we played every single tournament, and then every single tournament I've played as a professional, I've worn red. It has just become synonymous with me, and as who I am, Sunday Red. This logo, this tiger, it means something. Each stripe means something, and it means all the majors that I've won, all 15 of them. So
that's awesome.
So tiger. Who was the one who broke the trademark earlier?
Jordan.
Jordan.
Show yourself.
There you go. Okay. So if I happen to win another major championship, you'll be the first one to know that we're gonna have to redo the trademark and add a 16th stripe to it.
It's so good.
Okay. All right, thank you.
It was last week when Tiger Woods announced he would be teeing it up in this week's Genesis Invitational. In addition,
that's a look at the logo, by the way, the Sunday Red logo, the PGA Tour putting that out. And Tiger's going to be playing at Genesis. Not had a great run there.
He has not. We talked a lot about the idea that to have as many starts on this golf course as he does, it is absolutely baffling. He hasn't been able to break through. You look at his last few starts, that's official and unofficial. Last year, he finished tied 45th, made the cut at the Genesis Invitational, also made the cut at the Masters, but withdrew about halfway through his third round, of course, with a foot injury. And he is out on the golf course right now. And right now we want to welcome in our very own Kira K. Dixon, who is at Riviera and has been watching Tiger Woods this morning. Kira, what have you seen?
Well, Rex, it's a bit of a new look for Tiger Woods in 2024. As you mentioned, he's out here rocking his Sunday Red, and he's also got a new caddy on the bag in 2024. Lance Bennett picking up the bag for Tiger Woods. We know him from the likes of Davis Riley, Matt Kuchar, Sung J.M. I spoke with a member of Tiger's team who told me that Lance actually got the call about a few weeks ago and was approached to caddy for Tiger. I ran into him on the green over here at Riviera, and I said, how's it going? And he kind of chuckled and said, well, I'm in it. So he got to experience the full treatment down on the range as anybody and everybody on the grounds crowded to watch Tiger Woods warm up. So how did the team decide on Lance in the first place? Well, they leaned heavily on Tiger's former caddy, Joe LaCava. Joe and Lance are, of course, good buddies. Joe now on the bag for Patrick Cantlay. So they reached out to Joe, and he's a big part of the recommendation process for Lance Bennett. Lance is also currently on the bag of rookie Adrian Dumont de Chassart, who is not in the field this week. So they're looking at potentially doing a couple of events together with Tiger, depending on what he ends up playing this year. But he's going to be balancing that with continuing, at least as of now, to be on the bag of de Chassart. And in terms of the schedule today for Tiger, he came out around 8 a.m., did some putting, went down did that range session in front of quite the audience, and then I walked with him from the range to 10-tee and asked him about his schedule. He said that he's going to play the back nine, and then he's got three luncheons to host this afternoon, which is the life of the player slash tournament host.
So he's going to be quite full when he ends his day today. Kira K, we heard from Ryan Lavner and Eamon Lynch. They gave us their opinion on the new logo, the new look. Those guys probably have members-only jackets and stonewashed jeans. They don't really know fashion. You do. You were Miss America. What do you think about the new look?
Oh, I love it. I think it looks great. It's got all the really interesting fabric and weaving, and you know, anytime that we can introduce a little bit more fashion into golf, I'm very much in that camp. And his team's got it all on. They've got these nice cashmere sweaters with the tiger. So, you know, if anyone wants to send some my way, I'm very happy to accept any Sunday red.
Okay, well, we have no pull there. I think you probably have more pull on the ground than we do here in the studio in the snowstorm. But we appreciate you checking in with us as always. Kira K. Dixon live at Riviera.
Thanks, guys.
All right, listen, Tiger Woods. Let's talk a little Tiger Woods. Got a veteran caddy, as Kira was talking about, with Lance Bennett on the bag, friend of Joe LaCava, who has been on the bag for Tiger for a long time, and they are still quite close. They are going to continue to work on the back nine right now. And Tiger's going to play your schedule to play a full 18-hole pro-am tomorrow, and then he tees it up for real on Thursday, making his PGA Tour debut. Sit here and ask the question, as we do often when Tiger makes a start after a pretty lengthy layoff, what is a good week? And you think
top 10.
Top 10. That is a really good week.
Eamon did not like that.
He doesn't believe it.
Did not believe that. And look, I understand where that's coming from. Again, this goes to what have you done for me lately? What in his body work leads you to believe that? I'm also going to key in on something that Eamon said as well. The swing is going to be rusty simply because he doesn't have the reps. That's Tiger's language. That's what he uses right there, because his body hasn't allowed him to do the reps. I'm less concerned about that rust, because I feel like given the opportunity, given the fact that his body would allow him to play four rounds and then maybe four rounds in a few weeks at Bay Hill or wherever it is his next start is going to be, that rust goes away after a while. The trick here is what his body's going to allow. Because I do believe the swing, and we saw this certainly at the Hero and maybe to a certain degree at the PNC, the swing looks really, really good. It's different. It's a little bit more upper body, a little bit more arms. We talked about this yesterday, but it's what his body's going to allow him to do. If he can get from point A to point B, and you probably pointed out correctly that as long as you can get down the hill on number one and then back up the hill on 18, it's a relatively flat golf course.
Yeah, you and I have followed him since he's had all of his surgeries, but his most recent one, the ankle fusion surgery, and I was walking with him during a practice round at the Euro World Challenge. He says, my ankle can't move. It just can't, but the pain is gone. I think what people forget about is his back. His back still is a bit of an issue. That is something that is a pain management thing that he's going to probably have to take care of for the rest of his career. His back is still giving him some issues, not as much as before his spinal fusion surgery, another fusion surgery that he's had on his body, but it still is something that he has to concern about. Everybody's concerned about his leg, and it still is an issue, but it's not as painful as it was prior to this fusion surgery. The back still lingers. That pain still lingers with him.
And I love the stats. If you go back to the limited stats that we do have on him, driving's actually been pretty good. If you go back to what he did at the Hero, it wasn't great, but it was good enough for him to compete. It was his iron play and a short game that sort of let him down. So I would imagine it's going to be more of the same this week, that as long as he has kind of gone to this staple of hitting just this little soft fade out there that finds the fairway. I mean, this isn't part of his game from before. I mean, that's probably why he didn't play Riviera very well. It's the other parts of his game that you need to see. How comfortable is he going to be in and around those greens? Because as we saw certainly at Pebble Beach, the POA can drive guys absolutely mad. Now, he's not the only guy at this golf tournament. Sometimes it seems like we're only talking about him. But if you look at the field, it is absolutely stacked. As I pointed out, it's the year's third signature event. There you can see Jordan Spieth coming off a really, really good week last week at TPC Scottsdale. Ball striking was solid, and he was chipping out and holding long putts, just like we know Jordan Spieth is going to do. I would actually turn on that list to Scottie Scheffler, the world number one, and Eamon just talked a little bit about him. What do you think? I mean, we watched this in real time on Sunday, and I was sort of digging through my laptop trying to dig up stats on the last time he had back-to-back weeks of being in the positive category in strokes gained putting. Last 2 years, he hadn't done it. Now, he did do that in back-to-back weeks at Pebble Beach and Scottsdale, just barely, though, in Scottsdale. And I think this is sort of a testament to where he's at in the game. He is a sublime ball striker. We know he is, if not one of the best, then the best in the game at the moment. And my argument all along is, if he can just not give away strokes on the green, I feel like he's going to win more times than not.
And he's close to that. He's not far. He's just barely giving, I think, a tenth of a stroke away or something like that. He's outside, just outside the top 100 in strokes gained putting on the PGA Tour. And he finished, like I mentioned earlier, 160. This is remarkable to me. 162nd on the PGA Tour in strokes gained putting last year, and you still win PGA Tour Rookie of the Year. I think what we are expecting as fans and media members is the fact that he's now working with Phil Kenyon. He's got a new putter. He's got a new setup. Phil and him have been working on reads that we should expect instantaneous positive results. It's incremental, okay? It's going to take a little while. He has made some steps in a positive direction. It's not perfect right now. It wasn't perfect on the back nine at TPC Scottsdale. But the more he puts himself in that situation, the more he injects belief and confidence as he stands over the ball on the green, I think it's going to be scary, very scary for the players if he keeps that ball striking up and continues to putt better.
And I love the idea, and our colleague, well, sometimes colleague, Kevin Kisner pointed this out on the broadcast, loves to play, and I'm talking about Scotty here, loves to play at a fade off the tee and with his shots, and loves to play a hook when he's putting, which creates this sort of dichotomy in his own brain of what he sees makes him comfortable. And I want to go back to the ball striking. Like, I cannot overstate how well he is striking the ball compared to the rest of the field. We're talking about the world's best ball strikers. He picked up more than 12 strokes on the field last week in tee to green. It is an amazing stat.
It is ridiculous. All right, here's another guy I want to keep my eye on this week, and that is Xander Schauffele. Xander's last win on the PGA Tour, coming in the summer of 2022. It was the Genesis Scottish Open. Since then, he's had 31 starts on the PGA Tour, 16 top 10s in those 31 starts. That's a better than 50% average, including three top 10s and four starts this year. He has six starts at RIV and surprisingly just has one top 10. That came in his very first start back in 2018. I think Xander Schauffele is so hungry for a win right now. I mean, if you look at what he has done consistently to stay in the top 10 and have not won in close to 2 years, he's such a phenomenal, consistent player. But I think he's really itching to get a victory right now.
I love throwing Ryan Lavner under the bus every chance I get. And he always does the ultimate talk radio thing where he has picked Xander Schauffele in our sort of preseason podcast to be the player of the year. He's done it for three straight years. He did it again this time around. I keep making fun of him because he feels like, okay, if I keep saying it, I'm going to be right eventually. But I understand where he's coming from. There's nothing about his game. Look, we can point and talk a lot about Scottie Scheffler's putting. Name me one part of Xander's game that you don't like. You can't do it.
No, he doesn't have many weaknesses. I mean, as a matter of fact, his weakness in some categories may be strengths at the others on the PGA Tour.
Absolutely.
We're going to see him all week. We're going to see 70 of the world's best players competing at the Genesis Invitational, including Tiger Woods. Our coverage beginning Thursday, round number four, right here on Golf. Round number one, excuse me, at 4 p.m. Eastern on Golf Channel and Peacock. Same on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. It is 1 Eastern here on our channel. And this is Diego Ponce. He is a TGR Learning Lab member, actively pursuing a career in multimedia production with skills gained at the TGR Learning Lab. We are so blessed to be joined by Diego, who is a 15-year-old sophomore in Anaheim, and he is joining us live from Riviera, holding that microphone like a true professional. You got it down. Diego, hey, thank you so much for joining us. I want to talk about your process and the joy you get out of the TGR Foundation. What educational programs have you participated in that foundation?
Well, I've taken a number of classes at the TGR Learning Lab, from photography to multimedia to even a life science class. And they just helped me so much to pursue my dreams and what I want to do, because they also customize the classes so you learn the basics, but also at a pace that you like and your interests.
You mentioned the classes. What are your favorite classes with the TGR Learning Center?
Well, I've taken photography, multimedia, podcasting, I've taken a life science, and right now I'm taking financial literacy.
That's awesome. Hey, here's a question for you. What does the TGR Learning Lab offer you that maybe you couldn't get at your school in Anaheim?
Well, they offer me top-of-the-line programs to work on things such as videos and Photoshop. They also offer hands-on experiences that I can't get at school or at home, and top-of-the-line resources such as laptops, and just the overall experience is different. That's something I couldn't get at school or at home.
Now, you want to go into broadcasting. How have you built sort of your multimedia skills, the TGR Learning Lab program?
Well, through TGR, I've taken a number of podcasting and video editing classes that help me with my speech and delivery, which is very helpful for interviews like this, which I'm super excited about. And they just help me hone and grow my skills. That's really helpful.
All right, you're there at the Genesis Invitational. You were there last year as a student media member. And you're there today trying to gain some knowledge and experience. Tell me about your week. What are you looking forward to?
Well, this week has been pretty insane in a great way. I mean, the TGR Learning Lab has given me so many experiences that I wouldn't be able to get on my own without them. So being here at the country club, participating with you guys here, and it's just an awesome experience that I don't think I'll ever forget, honestly.
Now, Diego, I need your help here. I've spent my lifetime trying to come up with good questions to ask Tiger Woods. I fail more times than not, but you are going to have an opportunity today to actually ask him some questions in the press conference. What would you like to ask him?
Well, one question I have lined up for him is a pretty big one. I want to ask him, he knows all the proceeds from this tournament are going to help the TGR Learning Lab get more resources to help more kids such as myself. And I want to ask him, what is the message that he wants to send to these kids? Why does he want to help us? Like, if he thinks we're the future, I just want to know why, because it's really helpful what he's doing, and I'm greatly appreciative.
All right, Diego, you're 15. You got a lot of positive things in your future. Right now, do you know what you want to do as a professional?
Well, I have some ideas. I want to be an intern at a studio, and who knows, maybe there I can start to grow, but the TGR Learning Lab is helping me get these experiences, so I kind of know what to expect and what to prepare for in the future, which is really helpful and really great.
All right, Diego, do this for me. All right, here's a little practice and experience. Say, thanks for joining us on Golf Today, and give us your name.
Thanks today for joining us on Golf Today, and my name is Diego Ponce.
All right, so he's already better than us. That's fantastic. So.
And the question was better than any question I was going to.
Diego, thank you so much for joining us. We wish you all the best in your future, and thanks for sharing your experiences at the TGR Foundation as well.